I knew that they were called the Auburn Tigers, but I didn't know that they were also called the War Eagles. And they had an eagle on campus, and you could go and actually walk through the middle of the campus and see where the eagle was and go there at a certain time of the day where they would give the eagle exercise, so to speak. And so someone would put a big thing made out of leather, because the talons of an eagle are very, very strong. And he would hold the eagle there, and then on command, that eagle would fly around the stadium two or three times. And then would come back, and the way you train smart animals is through a reward system. So they would give the eagle a reward and wait a few minutes and then say the command again and do it again. They would do that about 3 to 5 times a day. And the students at Auburn University would often come. I was new to Auburn University in 1982, so I would take some time and go with another professor and actually watch the training of this eagle. I didn't really understand why it was called a war eagle. I thought perhaps it was a certain kind of eagle, or maybe the war part was added because in sports, and especially in football, there's a battle, and the concept of the war eagle seemed to fit the concept of that university. It's a smaller university, but a state university, as it goes. It's located just on the other side of Columbus, Georgia. Interstate 85, you cross Columbus, Georgia, and cross Interstate 85, and you're now in Alabama, and you're now in Auburn. On the right side of I-85 is the eastern time zone, and on the left side, the west side of I-85, is central time zone, because Alabama is the whole in central time, in almost all of Alabama. So it was a very interesting place. We weren't sure we were supposed to go there. I was sure the Lord was sending us there, but we, the flesh, Marilyn and I haven't been married that long, 4 years, 3 years. And we thought that our home was going to be Gainesville. And I thought the University of Florida was going to be my destination. I began my teaching career at the University of Florida when I displayed in 1968 the ability to understand some matters that dealt with computers that were very, very difficult for the typical graduate student, typical undergraduate student doing engineering, but it came really easy to me. A professor from Chance that also had a dual appointment with industrial system engineering, he observed my work, and at the end of the semester, he asked me if I would consider teaching the laboratory that he wanted to get people to help the other students try to get through and understand. It had developed a reputation of being so hard, this particular course. It's only a 2-hour course. And it had developed such a hard reputation that nobody wanted to do it. And so it was a challenge for me, and I excelled in the challenge. In 1968, I was 19 years old. And so for the first time, the ability was revealed that I had it was easy for me to understand difficult concepts and then explain them to the rest of the student population. I stayed in that work for almost a year when another professor from Industrial and System Engineering, who was also a professor of environmental engineering, he had a dual appointment, asked me to work with him. And my career took off as a computer person. So I started teaching in 1970, officially. I graduated in June on a Saturday, and graduation, you wore this kind of attire, long sleeves and a tie. It was a Florida field in the outside, okay? It's called a swamp now. And it only held about 45,000 students at the time, and that's where commencement took place. Everyone wore this kind of outfit. You wouldn't even be thought of anything if you didn't wear a tie. And for graduation, we put on the other thing, too. You might not know that in 1968, the students wore shirts and ties to the football games and a straw hat. Okay? As it goes, I learned that in order for me to teach at the university level, I needed a PhD. So that became, I was only really going to be getting an engineering degree and leave, but now that I thought that there was a future in teaching and I wanted to teach at the university, I actually wanted to teach at the University of Florida. Only to learn over the years that that's usually not a dream that is reasonable. Most universities don't hire their own. They hire somebody else. The question becomes, if you're the best university, where do you hire from? Think what I'm saying. So if you're the Illinois, or you're the Michigan, or you're the MIT, or you're the Stanford, where you hire from? Well, there's not enough people out of Stanford for MIT to employ, and there's not enough people out of MIT to Stanford to employ, and similarly for Illinois, and similarly for Michigan. So I was young, I didn't really understand that. I thought that I could beat that. And so I was married, and I had a job in environmental engineering, but I also went to graduate school. I worked day and night on a full-time job and then graduate school. And in order to support graduate school, because I didn't, my first salary was $10,000. Not a lot, 69. And in order to support graduate school, I could be a graduate student who was on an assistantship, but I would have to teach 2 to 3 classes. It was labs, but because I had such aptitude for teaching classes, the professors would have me teach alongside, and within a year or so, those professors were wanting to take time off and persuaded the department head, who became the dean later and so on, to allow me to teach the class. And that's how I ended up teaching in 1970. Graduated on Saturday, and on Monday, I started teaching EE 461 for the first time. When I retired from the university, I had taught 50 courses. Something like 2.5 times what anybody else has ever done in my department. I didn't know that. That was shared on the day of my graduation, of my retirement. When I obtained my PhD, there are lots of miracles, lots of things. It's at the time when when I was married to Marilyn and the opportunity came through prayer, her prayer and so on, I thought in 1982 that I had reached my goal. Because now I was a PhD, I was at the University of Florida teaching in electrical engineering. My research had to do with EEG processing and using the EEG to correlate the polygraph. It was funded by the CIA. When that work was finished, I had plenty of support, what's called grant support, so they wouldn't have to pay me out of the department. And so they hired me, but they didn't hire me as a professor. They hired me as an adjunct, waiting, because it was the middle of the year. I graduated in December, and there wasn't enough time for the paperwork in the university to do things that begin in the fall. So I went along with that. I did the research work. I also taught two classes and did a number of other things. In the second month, like in February, I kept thinking, I've reached my goal. I reached my goal. It was so hard. 82 from 70 when I first started graduate school. That's because I had a job and family and things to take care of. As it turns out, on or about April of 1982, the chair called me in and he said, I have to share with you. Can you come? I said, sure. I thought I was going to get what I had been waiting for all along, a full-fledged faculty position. Instead, he said I had to leave. That we did not hire me. I had to leave. And when you work for something for 13 years, it's real emotional. I remember wanting to cry, but not allowing myself to. Just ask why. Why? I just feel, he said, that it would be better for you to go elsewhere. How can I explain to him? But I've been working 13 years to work here. And I have an impeccable record. He went on. He was a person who enjoyed much discussion. And my department is in front of the Union, Museum Road. But I had been put with a computer engineering faculty in the French Fries building, which is across the music building on that part of campus, right in front of the bell tower. So it's a long walk, it's a 20-minute walk, 15-minute walk. And as I'm walking, now I can cry because nobody's watching. You know, I took the long road and took the path through the woods and things like that. As I was climbing up the road to the French Fries building, the music building's on the right, and the bell tower, and there's my building, something inside of me said, call Auburn. And I remember that I remember I had forgotten that when I had gotten close to finishing a PhD in 1978, I had interviewed at three universities, University of Central Florida, University of South Florida, and the University of Auburn, because I wanted to stay close to, if I get a job from somewhere else, UF can. Anyway, so all three offered me a job. But the requirement was that I had to finish in a certain amount of time. I didn't think I could finish in that time, so I didn't accept any of those. And instead, I started a business and life goes on. By the time that I got to my office, the feeling was so strong, it was 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. Thank goodness at Auburn is on Central Time. Because I climbed up, closed the door, and trembling, dialed the phone number of the chairman of Auburn University's electrical engineering department. If it was today, that wouldn't happen, because you call and you get this thing, they press the one and this and go to this and whatever. But when I interviewed, I remember the man's name, David Irwin, and he had given me his phone number. So I tried to see if it was the same phone number. It was indeed the same phone number. His secretary, his office is here, and secretary's right here, answered the phone, and I remember her name, and said her name, said, do you suppose I could speak to Dr. Irwin? And she said, yes, he's here, as a matter of fact. So she connected me. I don't quite remember exactly how I said it. I said, you offered me a job in 1978. This is 82. I finished my PhD December of 81. And I thought I was going to stay at the University of Florida, but that's not to happen. So, peradventure, would you have a position for me? Or that doesn't happen. If you don't understand academia, they do this a year and a half in advance and all those things. I just did, I was broken. So I said, I am interested. You suppose that, he said, Tony, he has this funny accent, Tony, give me 20 minutes, I'll call you back. I lived in Ocala, so getting out before 5 was really important. So I'm thinking, oh no, he's not going to call me back, but I wouldn't dare. There's no cell phones or whatever, so stayed right there and stared at the walls and thought about 12 years of hard work and those kind of things. I didn't think he'd call back. I said, well, when it gets to be 5 o'clock, I'll go get in the car and hurry home to Maryland and tell her the awful news. Dr. Irwin called back less than 20 minutes. He said, Tony, can you come here this Sunday? This is Friday. I said, yes, sir, I certainly can. Bring your wife. Come to my house. And so he gave me the address, and that's all he said. So on Sunday morning, we headed for Auburn, Marilyn and I. When we got there, there were 3 other faculty members there with their wives at Dave's house, and they had set up a dinner party for us, a very honoring kind of thing. And so the next day he said, I want you to do this, this, and that, and the other. And so, the normal things that happen, a seminar. But because, remember, I had applied in 78, there was some, this probably wouldn't happen anywhere else but Auburn. So at the conclusion of Monday, he called me back to his office at 3:30, said, sit down. How did you like Auburn? I said, I love it. I have not felt as honored anywhere in my life. And I liked it in 78. I just didn't think I could finish the PhD. So I put that PhD away and started a new one. That one I finished. He said, well, we want to offer you a job. So I'll have the letter ready tomorrow, but if you're leaving early, I'll just mail it. I said, it's okay, you can mail it. I wanted to stay and get it, but we needed to get back. I still was working at UF. So we returned on Tuesday, and sure enough, in a couple of days, was a full letter with everything he said in writing. I was to report in for the fall quarter. They were in the quarter system. For the fall quarter and start my career at Auburn. War Eagles. So you could maybe you understand a little bit about when God answered a prayer like that, that I was determined I was going to do the very best for these people. Marilyn ended up getting accepted in Auburn and went to college, which she didn't think she could. We went to the registrar. They invited us, not as a faculty member, invited us there. And within 15 minutes, said, you're admitted. Told her, you're admitted. We're like in disbelief. How is this? There's a university, Auburn University is good in the way they treat their faculty members. I can't say that for the universities in Florida. They don't. In Florida, they want to treat in the state the guys that work for the state, like we are also state employees, and they dump us all in the same bucket. And that's not true of any other university in the world, only in Florida. And so, you know, such things as the football tickets and whatever, you can go to the theater, but you pay full price because it would be unfair to the rest of the state employees if you got a discount to go to the theater as a faculty member. I want you to know this is the only place that did that. They never learn here. The War Eagle thing, it's inside my heart. They're orange and blue. One of the greatest things that happened in those 3 years I was at Auburn, all 3 years, Florida State came to play Auburn, two of the 3 years at Auburn, and Auburn won. And Auburn went to Florida State and won. Florida was not doing so good in those years. So I watched Auburn just dismantle Florida State, and that was just so good to me. They gave us 50-yard line seats, 50-yard line seats in the very middle of that's where faculty belong. They gave us parking things. I had almost a reserved parking space because that's where faculty. So a number of things like that. War Eagle stayed with me. I'm thankful to the Lord for Auburn and its War Eagles. Little did I know that that has a prophetic significance nowadays. I didn't know that. This week, Marilyn heard the message that I wanted to show you, but it's too long. So, about the prophecy that God gave about his war eagles. Did you know that when the siege of Jerusalem took place by Sennacherib and King Hezekiah was, the Bible records for us that there was a big siege of Jerusalem and Hezekiah. Actually, we don't read all that too often, but it was so bad that there was no food inside the city and stuff like eating human flesh was happening. What I didn't know is that Sennacherib was brutal. Brutal. And the way that he conquered places was through brutality that Hamas has copied. They used something called impaling poles, and there were so many people that were dead around Jerusalem. Jerusalem's a walled city. That's why he couldn't just take it. That they record, Josephus and others record that the stench of death surrounded Jerusalem, and all you could smell was human flesh decaying and things like that. Sennacherib was so intent on conquering Jerusalem that they came up with new weapons of war. They invented weapons of war. One of them was a catapult. Okay? They were the first time with them. And they had also gone all the way to India and conquered that. So the only thing he never conquered was Jerusalem. So they had found that eagles could be trained. So they had some gigantic number of eagles that they were training to pick up stones and things and go over the wall and drop them where people was. And so they brought this new weapon of war called the war eagles. They implemented those on Jerusalem, and it worked for a while, but then it didn't work because the eagles couldn't tell if somebody was Jewish or not. Isn't that funny? And they couldn't tell whether they were supposed to drop the thing on this side of the wall, on the other side of the wall. I mean, you can't, the eagle is over there. And then, anyways, you have to train them, but you couldn't go over the wall, right? Remember I showed you that the training had to be one-on-one. So that means they had thousands of trainers. And so the war eagles failed. Israel was in such dire straits that the Lord sent the prophet to Hezekiah, none other than Isaiah. And Isaiah came to tell Hezekiah, no weapon formed against you shall prosper. Get a little context now? Those literally new weapons they had. Furthermore, it's in Isaiah chapter 40 that says, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not grow weary. They shall walk and not faint. That's another word that came to Hezekiah through Isaiah in response to the eagles. Again, I didn't know that context. When the prophecy of war eagles was given to Dutch Cheat's brother Tim, it's his younger brother, 3 years younger, this so many years ago, the concept of a war eagle for him was also, no one ever, what's a war eagle? So he spent years reading Josephus and other places to get the context so he could try to understand what the Lord was saying about the war eagle prophecy, because he didn't understand it. That's what this video is about. And that lately the Lord has released a word to the body of Messiah. But what the word says is that my war eagles are going to accomplish a tremendous amount. Not the enemy's war eagles, but my war eagles. Anyway, it is a powerful, powerful Sam, it's in like in honor of Sam, who was supposed to preach today. Sam likes to go and find all these sources, and he finds this, and he finds that, and finds the other. And Tim Sheets did the same thing. So I thought it would have been an awesome thing to share. So I hope that you get a little to want to see this. You need an hour to see it. And if you're like me, I thought I was going to listen to the first 5 minutes and say, what's this about? And I stayed riveted until it finished. In fact, I prayed when they had the prayer at the end. I prayed with them. The Lord reminded me how important War Eagle University was to me. It was from him. As it turns out, I did so good in Auburn that Florida got jealous. I'm telling you the truth. And the people that were my bosses put my resume. I didn't authorize them to do that, but they put my resume in the faculty search that started in 1984. I came out number 2 out of 100. The top person was from Ohio State, and they wanted to offer him the job. So by late 84 to 85, they sent a letter to him. He turned him down because he was working for NATO, and he didn't want to do academia. He wanted to do his research, continue that in the context of the military. And so they said, well, offer it to Tony. And so they sent. God is so good. It blows me away. They sent that chairman to my office in Auburn. The letter arrived a day before the chair arrived or so. When he came, I sat him in my office. The first thing I said, this office is about 3 times your size. And over there is a Vax computer just for me. Anyway, I didn't stay in my desk. I had couch and chairs, and I'm telling you, big stuff in a brand new building. It hadn't even been open 6 months. And I said, did you know that your faculty did this? He said, well, not really. I was in at NSF, but when I returned from NSF, they had done it, and you were, after all, the second candidate. I said, yeah. Well, I'm not interested. Actually, I was trying to be a believer. There's a song that says, take this job and shove it. And I know the music, and I wanted to say and sing that and so on. So he was kind of like positive and said, well, okay, well, tell me what's the difference 3 years, huh? Is this somehow, you know, am I prettier now or, you know, what? I was just a little bit. And said, no, that's okay. I was right. He said, I was right. See, you came to this place, and you were shining like a bright star, and now you can come back to Florida. That's one thing I've learned about faculty members. They are pretty well stuck in themselves. There is a word, I'll think of it in a minute, applies to all faculty members. Anyway, I told him I didn't think. I come home and shared with Marilyn, guess who was in my office today? And I said, Blake Charrington. She goes, huh? The chair of EE that fired me. And he confirmed that was a letter. There was a letter. It had arrived the day before him. And I got offered a job in Florida. And I started laughing. Ha, 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 ha. They can take that job and shove it. I can actually say that to her. And I don't care anything about them, etc. And no, I was just going on and on. She was over there quiet. She's done this to me, I don't know how many thousand times. I said, I would never go there. She said, that's too bad because I've been praying for you to go back. Okay. Get myself off the chair and making a fool out of myself, whatever. So you become then the number one, the first. Well, I'm like Gideon. I need to have three. So it's you. There's going to be three others. And I picked them. First one I picked was my best friend, Auburn, who wanted us to do many, many things together and had done many things together. We're working for the military, awesome believer named Dr. Shumpert. And the other one was the chair, Dave Irwin. So in the next week or so, I went to see Dr. Shumpert, spend some time with him. He said, Tony, I think you ought to take it. Okay, certainly Dave Irwin is not going to tell me that. So I went to Dr. Irwin. He just read the letter and so on. He said, he goes, dadgummit. When he said that, I said, uh-oh, what's the dadgummit about? The dadgummit is about the new dean that had just been put on over there, and that he was a stickler about promoting the associate professors, promoting to the associate professor and so on. And so he said that the dean had said that he was going to enforce the 5 published article thing. Now I have grants. I can't tell you what I've done. It's big. But, my papers were coming along, but they weren't there yet. So after a while, Dave said, I can not only match the money, I'll even double it. But I cannot guarantee you that this dean will let you become an associate professor. Then he said, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, he said. Tony, you know how much I care for you, what you've done here. You've been awesome faculty member. How it all came about that you came. I mean, that's how I felt about him, too. But as your friend, not as your chair, I think you ought to take it. It's the reason I'm here. I think War Eagle University was really good to me. And because of that, I listened intently to what this prophetic word was about. Peradventure, maybe I could become a war eagle. Isn't that interesting? I hope you read it or see it. And I hope that you draw some same kinds of conclusions. Let's stand. Father God, in the name of Yeshua, just to bring something out of the blue without context, you can bring that to me, you brought it to me. I understand the war eagle thing. I don't know anybody else here could. So Lord, I've endeavored to set up this and make it available so the congregation can see it in their privacy. Lord, on this day, I want to remember Maryland, and this day, November 18th, it was a Saturday. She gave birth at 8 o'clock on Friday night. They had to use forceps to get him out. So they damaged his face. He's still damaged. They damaged her, too. And I thought that she fought a really good fight to bring forth that child. I wasn't sure how we were going to handle the gigantic bruise that was left in that baby's face. You've been so good to us. And you're good to our congregation. You're really good to our congregation. So Father, I thank you. I pray that the messages that were brought today, and there were messages brought today, both in the prayer that was made in the beginning and in the Lana Vosser prophecy, that our people would be attentive to what the Spirit of God wants to say to the congregation, like it says in the book of Revelation. And so, Lord, I pray that these resources that you're sharing around the body of Messiah, which we're part of, would resonate with our people and they would embrace it. Lord, I thank you for everything that took place today. I pray for a great Thanksgiving for our congregation. And we thank you for everything in Yeshua's name. Amen.